Hello, welcome to another episode of the Derm Health Go podcast. I'm Marnie, your host, and today I'm thrilled to have Dr. Jag from Dr. Jag Aesthetics and Hair Regrowth Therapies join us from Adelaide in Australia. He holds esteemed qualifications such as the MBBS, membership of the Royal College of General Practitioners, which is in the UK, and he is a fellow of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners here in Oz as well. He brings a wealth of knowledge in treating hair loss and promoting hair regrowth through innovative therapies. And in our conversation, we delve into these common misconceptions about hair loss. There are many. I'm sure you've heard of quite a few. We explore its main causes and discuss the impact of lifestyle on hair health. Dr. Jag offers invaluable insights into differentiating between normal hair shedding and serious hair loss conditions, and really advises on when to seek professional help. Because I'm sure we're all kind of going through a little bit of a hair loss stage at the moment with changing of seasons. It can happen, but when do we actually know that we need to seek further investigation? We also cover the spectrum of hair loss treatments or hair regrowth treatments and therapies, from non-invasive methods to a little bit more advanced therapies, and discuss the role that beauty industry professionals, dermal therapists, clinicians, and hairdressers can play in supporting individuals facing hair loss challenges. So this is really key. This is a great conversation to have. So if you are either a therapist that are wanting to support your clients in potentially recognizing or helping with hair regrowth, or maybe you have hair loss or know someone that is struggling with hair loss as well, Dr. Jag outlines practical steps towards healthier, more luscious locks. I started by asking Dr. Jag what he thought was the biggest misconception about hair loss.
I feel many people have this understanding that what they're applying on their scalp, like a shampoo or a serum, will grow their hair. Or they might feel that whether they are using something that's caused their hair loss. Because if you see the structure of the hair, each and every hair that's growing on our scalp or on our body is being supplied by a blood vessel. So the problem is under the scalp, under the skin. I don't deny the fact that you have scalp microbiome, and skin and scalp health is very important. If you have fungal infections, or if you're using products like, you probably know, sulfates and parabens, which are disrupting the normal microbiome, that will contribute to hair loss. But majority of the time, we should be thinking there is something else going on that is leading to your hair loss that has happened just recently. And these things can be going on for months before you notice that the hair has given up.
It makes sense. We've got so much hair, you're not going to notice if you lose an extra 5 or 10 hairs a day until many months down the track.
It's interesting you mentioned that. See, we have about 100,000 hair on our scalp, but we can lose up to 50 to 100 hair a day. Most people know about this. But before falls out, it starts to get thinner. So actually, it just doesn't fall off. The hair has to become thinner and weaker, and the hair that has fallen out today has actually been uprooted like a month and a half ago. So what you're seeing today is hair lost, and which has actually given up a month and a half ago. It has been uprooted, and before that it had become thinner and weaker, and that's why the body gave up on it, and it's coming out now. So there's a process to it.
And we're going to talk about some of the ways that you use to look at hair more closely, because using just your eyesight is not going to necessarily be able to determine the density of hair. But before we get into that, let's cover some of the main causes of hair loss and then how we can differentiate each type.
See, hair loss in men and women can be different. So let's talk about men, if it's okay with you, because that's a very, so this is called pattern alopecia. We see that in men who are balding, either their hairline will start receding or their crown will start to widen. And then eventually you will notice that all that is left is the hair on the sides and on the back. And if you think of people who are losing hair, that's how generally in a particular pattern they lose this hair. In females, if we talk about female pattern hair loss, they tend to keep the length of the hair, but the hair is more thinner. They'll say that the ponytail is becoming thinner. Also, they'll notice that the scalp is showing more. So they won't have a receding hairline or crown widening, but they'll notice that the hair is thinner, the ponytail is thinner, and the scalp is showing more. So this is female pattern hair loss. These are the more common ones. And then in females, unfortunately, you know, with hormones, we have postpartum hair loss. When they go through menopause, that's a different kind of hair loss they can experience. But common to both men and women, one thing is telogen effluvium, which is hair loss after stress. Now, stress can be emotional, breakup, moving countries, bereavement, or it can be physical, drastic weight loss, going through a COVID illness, or if you've not been looking after your nutrition, and suddenly you go on to vegan diet, so it's a different kind of diet you've applied, or you go through an inflammatory diet, it will affect the hair on your scalp. And then these are the other most common causes, are whether you are deficient in iron or vitamin D levels are not up to date, or your B12 folate is not up to date, or you have a thyroid problem. So these are the main ones, but these, we call them non-scarring alopecias, which means most of the times we can regrow hair. But then there's a different type, which is a scarring alopecia. In scarring alopecia, you'll have pain on the scalp. Now, these are more worrying conditions. They need to be picked up quicker, because hair follicle in these conditions, it dies off and it's replaced by scar tissue. And we can't help much. And unfortunately, like, we can do something, but it is more of a specialist realm. It'll need medications, and we can try. It's an autoimmune condition most of the time. So these are another types of hair loss that needs to be catered to and picked up early. And I think the last one I would say would be patchy hair loss. Like, some people would come in saying they've got a round patch of hair on the beard or on the scalp. And that needs to be addressed quicker as well. This can get worse, and it can cause hair loss all over the body. So I'm giving you a very doom and loom picture of it. But it's like, when you start seeing and reading through it, you know, it's like, well, I think the take home message is that most of the time men have a pattern hair loss, females generally have a pattern hair loss, and most of the times we can fix it. And there are, as long as we look at the biochemical markers, and we take a holistic approach, look at how the scalp is. And it's a multi-pronged approach, but things can be fixed. And not every hair loss is the same. So that, I think that's what I would like to pass the message across.
Well, that leads me to this next question, which is, how do we actually determine from a layperson, or maybe from a therapist that isn't in a hair specialist environment, the difference between normal hair loss and a hair loss condition?
So if I touch on this fact, that one thing, take home message for the therapist or for the people, is if you're having pain on your scalp and your hair, and you're losing hair, and mainly it could be hair, or it can be anywhere else, but that's very important. You need to seek help. We might need to do a scalp biopsy. If you're noticing round patches of hair loss, that's where the therapist or your partner or your relative should say that, look, this needs to be addressed sooner. So those are the things that anyone can pick up, that this is, something's not quite right. These things definitely need attention. Coming down to the more common causes and the more common presentation that you will see, it comes down to the first part that we talked about, the pattern allocation. Most of the time, if a man comes in, he says, oh, my hair is thinning, or like you can see, my hairline is receding, my crown is getting wider. This means that this person is most likely having a pattern alopecia. If someone comes and tells you, like a female, that look, my hair is thinning, or my scalp, I can see it's showing more, that means she is probably going for female pattern hair loss. And if someone comes and says, look, I am just shedding my hair in clumps, it happens a lot, you see it in female, that could be that whether they're going through telogen effluvium. So without making it more complicated, you can, rather than telling at that moment that, look, maybe try this shampoo or try this serum, you could tell them, maybe this seems a bit more is happening in your situation. There's something not quite right, which you can sense, which I can sense, but I think we should seek help in this instance. So it's like trying to point out there's something not quite right. They are losing hair, but they could just prompting that, look, maybe get your GP to see if there is an issue with your bloods. You know, that's the most likely starting point, and ask someone maybe who's got understanding of the hair and scalp to see with a dermatoscope. Generally, skin cancer doctors, they have a dermatoscope, they can have a look, and they can decide whether it's a scarring, non-scarring alopecia, or whether something can be done about it.
Great points there. And we are going to talk about some of the gold standard treatments and how to actually assess the hair. But what's come up is you mentioned that stress is a really big factor in hair loss. What is actually happening at the hair matrix, in the scalp, at the circulation? What does stress do to the hair? How does it cause hair loss?
So when we talk about hair loss, when women or men come and saying, look, my hair in clumps is coming out, doctor, we tend to ask them what happened 3 months ago. Generally, that's the time, whether you've had a severe, like an illness after COVID, you know, you've had COVID, and that's a very well-known fact, or if you've had a severe illness, or you have drastically reduced your diet, or you've gone through bereavement or job loss or something, that's what we need to ask them, what's happened 3 months ago. As to what causes this type of hair loss, it's the hair cycle, which is normally 7 to 8 years. And as we age, this hair cycle gets shorter. But with stress, this drastically shortens down. And the hair that would have stayed on the scalp for 6 to 7 or a bit longer years, the hair cycle shortens to 1 or 2 months and it detaches from the root. So this condition is called telogen effluvium. As to exactly what is going on at the scalp level, we notice there's inflammation there. And we notice that the hair, that generally there should be 2 or 3 follicles that should be coming out, it limits down to maybe just 1 hair coming out from that follicle. So that's where, now this hair, which is coming out now, as I mentioned earlier, it's uprooted 3 months ago. Or a month and a half ago, it's given up on its life. And the newer one that's probably coming in its place is not going to be that strong. The other understanding that we have is that, let's say, physical stress, if you've gone through, as we mentioned, diet, crash diets, or COVID, the body starts to readjusting itself. And as I told you, each and every hair and 100,000 of them are supplied by blood. So the body is going in recovery mode. So it's kind of draining its nutrition to essential organs. So that's another contributing factor that's happening. And that's why it doesn't think the hair is important. And it starts to direct the nutrition and blood flow. And that's the hair doesn't get enough and it falls off.
So makes sense.
There's a few things going on there that leads to this, yeah.
It's like your hair, as far as a survival perspective, it's not a requirement. So it makes sense that your body would stop the growth of hair or the production of hair at that time because it might be needing resources elsewhere. Yeah. It goes into a little bit of a myth, maybe busting, when someone cuts their hair. Mm-hmm. For example, with gardening, you cut limbs off a tree or something to allow more growth.
Yes,
does a haircut allow your hair to have more growth? That's completely myth.
It's a myth. It looks, so basically when you go really short, yeah. See, when the hair grows, it grows straight for a short while, then it plops over. So because from one follicle, you might have 2 or 3 hair going. Now, when it flops over, it covers the scalp more and you think that you've got more hair. When you part it out and look with the microscope, you can actually look where the follicles are. So when you go a bit short, the hair tends to grow like that. Thick and initially, and that's why you might think, oh, actually my hair has grown, but actually you can't grow new follicles. Once the follicle has died down and closed on itself, the only option is a transplant. So you need to try and intervene early on. And just to answer in summary your question, cutting your hair really short will not grow here. That's another myth.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of myths around this subject.
Give you an example of my barber. When I was I didn't realize, because see, men are very different from females. Okay, me being a bloke, I went to my barber. We get a relationship with our barber every week. You go, we try and get those fade cuts. Now I'm growing my hair longer because the more I know about it, I'm like, oh, they probably have fungal infections and all. I've seen that. So, being a bit careful.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yes. And he noticed that my crown was whitening. Okay. And he was like, oh, do you like a shower? And he said, yeah, I do standing in a shower. I said, look, mainly you're standing in the shower and the water is falling here. And that's why your hair is, you're losing hair. It kind of makes kind of sense that could be happening. But I need to be standing hours on end for it to have a physical problem there. I was going through androgenic alopecia at that time. So I had to fix that. So I think as a barber, they're dealing with hair. So they need to say something and they want to help, but that's their understanding, you know, and that was his understanding. Not everyone's the same, but it's just an example. And like, oh no, I talked to him about male type baldness, and he was like, ah, it makes sense. So he was keen to know about it as well.
So be careful where you take your advice from.
Yes.
So let's talk about the actual measurement of hair loss and hair growth. How do you use this, or how do you do this? You have a machine called the Hair Matrix.
Yeah.
What does this do?
Okay. The science of hair and scalp study is called trichoscopy. Now, when we look at a skin lesion, for example, you know, because I do skin cancer, we've got to put a dermatoscope on it, and we can analyze in special light as to what the skin looks like, what kind of colors are there, how deep the mole is. You can get a fair bit of idea. Now, we've used this to understand what's happening at the scalp level. So you can buy like just a magnifying glass, which is electronic, from eBay. And you can just put on it and you can see the scalp a bit magnified. But this is a bit different. With Hair Matrix, we can count the hair follicles. They are called follicle units. We can have a time stamp of them. We can see which ones are closing up on themselves. That's another important information. Then we look at the hair itself. So when you look at the thickness of the hair, that's the most important bit of information that we can use as doctors to see what's going on. A normal hair is around 100 microns. That's how thick it is. When it starts getting thinner and weaker, we can have a timestamp of it, that whether it's a vellus hair or it's a terminal hair. That's how we quantify them. Now, see, we are not porcupines. We don't, all the hair, you know, don't grow in at one go. On our scalp, we might have baby hairs, we might have stronger hairs, we might have weaker hairs. So when we take photos from different parts of the scalp, especially the thinning part, we can look at a bigger area. And we can analyze how the scalp looks like, what the distance between the follicles is, how thick the hair is. And to give you an example, let's say in female pattern hair loss, from one follicle, you'll see two hair coming out. One is thinner than the other one. That's how you kind of, and you have to see a few of them to see, oh, is this is what's happening. And then you say, oh, maybe this is what the treatment we should be initiating. If someone is just losing hair, they'll just have hair in the same kind of hair cycle. But you'll notice a recently closed up follicle in them. Or you'll see a follicle which is growing a baby hair. So there are many things that you can understand about this. So let's say you've taken a timestamp. It's given you one bit of information. The history is very important. We might need to do blood tests for them. So it is a part of the holistic treatment that and the diagnostic procedure that you've done that. Now you initiate treatment. Let's say you've initiated treatment and the hair grows just like a centimeter amount. It's slow, it grows slowly. The treatments that you initiate as well will take up to 3 to 6 months to show some effect. But if you can time stamp it in like a month or so, and you can reassess the same area, you can take measurements and analyze and see, oh, are we in the right direction? Or whether we need to change something, whether we need to increase the dose. So that's how I had to look into a device, because most of the time you can do it manually. Yeah. But when you do it manually, there's a lot of human error and you won't be able to take many measurements. So that's a manual way. I first got that one actually. The salesperson said, you need to get that. And I found it very difficult because I was just sitting there and I was missing hair. So with this one, it is very reliable because you can get the timestamp. And you know, okay, what's going on? It gives many other parameters as well.
That's amazing. isn't technology is just incredible. It means that it's not as subjective. And also when you're doing a treatment plan, you're going to know much sooner if it is working, because it's going to tell you, are there more hairs in the area? What's the density of the hair that's growing back? How incredible to use this, not just in that initial diagnosis, but that ongoing care plan and that maintenance and checking if you need to change up the treatment plan.
This device itself has got another lens, which I use for skin cancer as well. So the same thing with skin cancer. Let's say most of the times you can tell if a mole is sinister, you can take it off, but it does a timestamp for it. It really takes very accurate measurements, and it's got AI built in it. So it gives me an indicator as what most likely this is. Some moles we just have to monitor. We just ask them to come back in a few months' time. And we recheck it again. And you see, normally when I'll take a photo with a dermatoscope, I would manually measure it. But there's only two kind of measurements I can do. With this, you get a whole circle diameter that if it's grown one side, you know, it can really closely monitor it. So that's why it's useful in that regards as well.
Amazing. What an amazing machine. So talk to me about the gold standards in treating hair loss. And I'd like to cover a few of them. Maybe we could start with some of the least invasive to the more invasive type of methods and the ones that you use in your clinic.
So the least invasive would be lifestyle changes. I think that everyone, you know, doesn't like to hear, but I'll just good sleep, avoid anti-inflammatory diet. Nutrition is very important. So I suggest like nuts, for example. For men, 2 Brazil nuts a day. It's got selenium that can help. For women, just 1 a day. A teaspoon of pumpkin seeds, 3 or 4 soaked almonds. And having a good nutritious diet, really, it's like coming back to the hair again. If you look at the hair structure, it is being supplied by blood. It needs micronutrition. So that's one part. While we are there, at the least invasive is finding out if you have any deficiencies. Iron, vitamin D, thyroid, and working on that, that's another important part. Now, if we come a bit further down, I try and put it into a stimulation therapy and blockage therapy. So stimulation therapies are microneedling. So have you heard of microneedling? Yeah, you've done microneedling. Yeah. With Dermastan.
Yeah, that's right. On the face, scarring.
Derma pen, and yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You can buy a home, people use the roller. Mm-hmm. I don't prefer the roller. I've got a video on my website, on YouTube as well, how a stamper is better. You see how you had the Derma Pen 4? It has vertical stamping option. You don't have to buy the electronic one, but just there's a manual dial-up Derma stamp, and it has proved that it really helps by causing microtrauma to the scalp, and body tends to send growth factors there. And what is there in the scalp? They are hair. And that tends to grow because it's receiving a lot of nutrition and growth factors. Should I tell you a story here about the least invasive? Okay, this is a true story. In England, there was a farmer, yeah, and it was published. He had a cow, and he would bend down to look after the cow, and cow would lick his, you know, scalp. And they just had this interesting relationship because it was his pet. And you wouldn't believe it, in 2 or 3 months, he started growing some hair. Now, I'm not saying you need to go and buy a cow. Yeah, but actually, they looked into it, that why was he having some baby hair on his bald scalp? It was actually the microneedling effect of the cow's tongue, or cow's rough tongue.
And I can confirm my grandfather was a dairy farmer. Cows have very rough tongues, right?
Very rough tongues, yes. So that's why microneedling is good. You know, there's a safer way of doing it. So make sure you can watch the video, which tells a bit more. Then scalp massages. So you can buy a wooden roller from eBay, and just rolling it 2-3 times a day, it moves the scalp. And that promotes blood supply. You will find there's a lot of stress and tightness here. See, the whole idea is coming back to the hair structure. We're trying to promote blood to go to the hair. And if you do the massages, it kind of gets there, and hopefully the hair will grow. So that's that part. Then medication. And that comes down to, we have the options of minoxidil, finasteride, and spironolactone. I would say seeing your doctor to talk about whether this is suitable for you, because there are some restrictions. If you're pregnant, you can't use it. Or if you're planning for a baby, we advise not to be on some certain medication. So apart from that, then we have PRP. Is where you've heard of PRP. You've probably done PRP as well. So PRP is where we take your own blood, one tube, take the plasma out, and we inject it in the scalp. So that's like adding bio-nutrition to the scalp. That's evidence-based as well. You need to have a good PRP collecting system. And that's something else you can add on to promote hair growth. And I forgot to mention supplement. Hair supplement generally has got more zinc and selenium. But of course, chat to your doctor to make sure it's not got any interactions with your medication. Yeah. One other thing, LED light therapy.
Of course.
So the laser caps, now it might sound like a gimmick, but because you asked for evidence-based treatment, see, going to a salon and getting LED once or twice a week for 4 to 6, I have got a great LED device, you know, but I would say it won't help you in long term. It can help with your face rejuvenation, but you need to be doing it more long term. It's good for LED, it's good for acne, for, you know, activating the PRP. But if you go to a salon and say someone tells you that you use the LED for a month and a half, it'll grow your hair, it will help, but you need to be using that money to getting a laser cap, a red laser cap, which has shown definitely that's one other thing, long-term investment that you can use to grow hair.
And you also mentioned, so do you stack treatments as well, PRP with LED, for example?
When I give PRP, it's just to activate the PRP, I will put them under the for 20 minutes. Because even if they tend to purchase a package of 4 weeks of PRP, I know in the long run, it will not go long. It won't go further. The money won't be pushed on further. Because they rather need to use this, if they were using it for hair growth, if they're using it for the face, I think, let's say they've got acne, that's when they can use blue and red light. I think that's where it is beneficial for 6 weeks. But for hair growth, because you see, we coming back to the understanding that hair has got a cycle to it. So many hair, 100,000 hair almost are growing. We need to promote them. And rather, if you have a home device, which doesn't need to be as powerful as the ones that we have, it will give you better value longer term, and it can be shared with partners as well. So, yeah.
So it's interesting that some of those topical treatments are similar to what might be used in aesthetics, but of course in a completely different way for different reasons, and the holistic approach from potential supplementation, medication, finding out the cause of the issue in the first place is so important. Because if you were to do 3 months of LED and not actually treat the cause, then...
Exactly. I think that's like most clinics I'm seeing, they would offer, let's say you're losing hair, and they would offer PRP, 3 sessions. So we give PRP here as well, but it's not my first call of saying, well, look here, if you're losing hair, you should get PRP. Because you need to understand what the cause is. And most of the time, it's pretty straightforward analyzing it. And we need to work on the cause, stop the DHT, which is the main cause of pattern alopecia. And we start medication, we start vitamins, we get them in a home routine. And if they then think, no, doc, I need to boost it, is there anything else you can do? That's when we say, okay, now we've got good plasma. If you're not a smoker, let's try that.
That diagnostic element is so important. So let's talk about what role can perhaps beauty therapists, dermal therapists, hairdressers play in hair loss for their patients? We've had other conversations where you said it would be great to have more education for hairdressers around hair loss. So what role do you see them playing in hair loss prevention, hair loss support if they're having hair loss treatments, etc.?
So like we mentioned earlier, just remember that hair loss is slightly individual. It can have different causes. If you think someone is losing hair, just have a chat with them a bit more later. See, like, have you got your bloods checked? Just a simple thing. That rather than saying, before you recommend something, you can ask them, look, have you had your bloods checked? How is your nutrition like? Have you gone on a sudden crash diet? And say, look, why don't you get your bloods checked by your doctor first and see if there is something that is underlying. See, in females, I forgot to mention, there's a sinister cause of hair loss. Androgenic tumors can sometimes cause hair loss in women. So that's why if they are losing hair, they should certainly be chatting with the doctor. Now, that's one part, like prompting them a bit more that go and see your doctor to make sure that he's looked up at your biochemical markers. Now, with the treatment initiation, yeah, of course, it becomes difficult because you want to make sure that there are not any other medication before recommending them any supplements. And, you know, many a times if you recommend them a supplement, they can have a reaction. They might question you on that. So, but you can ask them, vitamin D, you can't harm. You can tell them, make sure you take vitamin D. So as a doctor, I can't pass on this therapeutic advice, but vitamin D, generally, I would say to masses that, look, it is good to have vitamin D every day. So that's another thing, something you can prompt them, and it's their decision if they want to start taking vitamin D. Coming to hair loss treatment, see, evidence-based treatment, as I mentioned, dermastan, microneedling. You can't harm the scalp by doing dermastan correctly if you do it. And it's just twice a week that you have to do. Using a scalp massager or just like massaging your scalp with the wooden roller, you can't do harm by doing that. Avoiding products which have got sulfates and parabens. That's another thing you ask them, look, have you started a new shampoo? And then if someone is having hair loss with pain, telling them, look, you need to be seeing the doctor. Yeah. That there is something not quite right. Looking at the scalp, like you could look at a scalp, and if you think it's got dandruff on it, if it looks drier, just an over-the-counter shampoo, like there's a one called Dercos sensitive shampoo. You know, that has got an exfoliant action in it, and it kind of helps with taking off all the grime and the fungus that's causing it. So tell them that you can start that. And see your doctor to see, because you see, scalp dandruff can be a bit more sinister, which might need medicated lotions, like some steroid lotions, and that can help. Also, scalp, when you look at it, sometimes if someone is washing their hair daily, it can be very dry. So it could be that they're using a shampoo which is probably got sulfates and parabens, just stripping away the oils. So those kind of things. You know, general advice on nutrition, you can. So rosemary hair oil, okay. Rosemary hair oil, if you get a few drops in water, kind of turns into a serum, you can use that. That's another simple advice, you know, people can implement. So there are a few things, but mainly raising awareness among hairdressers, if they can kind of point out that something's not quite right. If they notice a patch, they could initiate, they could be helping someone early on. You know, and that's why if they understand about this, there are some blogs which I've written down, they could be directing someone. They might save a life, for example, for someone who's losing hair, you know, to say that, look, they might be having something sinister going on with females, for example. So there is a benefit in hairdressers to learn about it. And the people, the clients who come to them will probably appreciate it a lot.
Ultimately, it's about promoting that scalp health, right? And also, I think we often, in many, many areas, we work so independently of each other, where if you're a hairdresser, partner with someone like Dr. Jag or partner with, you know, a specialist in that area, have some other people on call that you can perhaps recommend, refer to, so that when these things do come up, you can at least feel like you can send your clients somewhere.
So we do video consultations as well. Like most of the times we can tell with a video consult, and of course there's some a form they can fill us, send their photos in, send their medical history, and we can at least direct them that, look, this is probably what's happening. And if you are interstate, you know, we can send scripts interstate as well. But if we think that this needs more investigation, they can see the local GP, at least start that part and have a bit of a supervised plan.
Yeah, because your hair is such, you know, they call it your crown. So it is something that people feel quite self-conscious about. I know that when I had hair loss postpartum, and then when it started growing back, I felt really uncomfortable. I know that's a natural process. It came back normal. But for these more ongoing conditions or sudden hair loss or thinning of hair, they can be areas that make people quite uncomfortable. I was wondering, you were talking about – sorry.
You mentioned a couple of important points. Sorry, I interrupted you.
That's okay.
Thanks. Because it's, yes, you mentioned about postpartum hair loss. Yes, the hair come back in majority of the women. But at times, it triggers androgenic female pattern hair loss in them as well. So it can take longer. That's why it's something we should not just leave it to come back.
Yeah.
Things can be done because it can unmask underlying hair loss patterns like androgenic alopecia in women. So we need to try and hit on that early on. And in terms of, like you mentioned, how sensitive, we've talked about this before. You see, men, it's socially acceptable somehow that they can lose hair and they can look all right. But for females, it's not socially acceptable. But when you talk to men, like I've seen many a times, like I get this, you're very right. Any lady I've spoken to who's losing hair, they want it back. But some of the men, you know, you talk to them, they're like, no, it's okay, it's all right. But when you tell them, look, something can be done, they are interested.
Yeah, interesting. Even though it's dysfunction, like there's obviously some dysfunction there that is causing it, we just think, oh, it's socially acceptable. When you actually think about a really healthy scalp, there should be, most of the time, there should be hair there. And sometimes I'm sure there's not a possibility to regrow hair and there's lots of other conditions, but, it's really interesting, so, that mindset.
I would call on to the partners that if they notice their husband or boyfriend or their son you're noticing a widening of their crown or their hair is receding, you need to have a chat with them, because men won't, like, I have a bloke, we won't take action. And we'd be like, and if it's lost, that then it's like, okay, that hair follicle is lost, you can't do much. Then the only option is a transplant. And even if you do a transplant, even that transplanted hair would need looking after with medication.
So it is in their best interest to seek something earlier rather than later, because there's a chance. Yeah. Yeah.
Thinning hair or receding hairlines, that's when you.
So is it possible if their hair has thinned that there can be options to thicken the hair?
Exactly.
Yeah. So
hair thinning, as we mentioned, like 100 microns is the thickness. If it comes down to 50 or 40, we can push it. When it comes down to 30, you can't sometimes tell whether this one will grow thicker. But most of the times with medication and stimulation therapy, possibly PRP if we initiate, we can increase nutrition to that hair. We can push the hair cycle forward. And we can block, I'm talking about the most common hair loss, that's androgenic alopecia. We can block the cause of that with medication safely.
So there is hope.
There is.
There is hope. Oh, well, it's been really insightful to speak with you, Dr. Jag. Okay. I admit I've learned some things about hair loss and hair patterns that I did not know about before. So thank you for being so forthcoming with your information. Where can people find more about you and the work that you do?
So I'm based in Adelaide. I've got a clinic here, and my website is drjag.au. On that, in my blog section, I'm still working on the website a bit more. There should be an option of sending some self-help things that people can start doing. It's still early on. We're working on that. But under the blogs, there'll be a link to the Instagram and YouTube videos, which I'm improving on. But I'm trying to put some kind of self-help things and things that people can start doing at home. Educational.
Fantastic.
And we'll consultations as well if someone's interested. Yeah.
We'll make sure to put all of those links in the show notes. So for anyone that's wanting to contact you directly can do, whether it's for a consultation or whether it's a local clinic or salon or therapist in the area that wants to get in touch, or someone within Australia as well. So it's been wonderful to have you. Thank you again for your time. And yeah, it's good to touch on hair.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, that wraps up another episode. Thank you so much for joining us this week. It was wonderful to have you here again. We will be launching another podcast episode next week, so be sure to tune in. And although it's lovely to listen and learn from podcasts, and I know it's easy just to consume and learn and learn and learn, but at one point, the integration and adding what you have learned into your life is really important too. So if you've got some takeaways from this episode, I would love for you to share them with us and perhaps others on social media, because you never know, it might help their business or their professional and personal development grow as well. So make sure you tag any key takeaways from this episode at dermhealth.co and digitalhealth.co. I'll see you again next week. Bye.